Welcome to 5-Minute Journal Club, Trope 2 Antibody Drug Conjugates in the Management of Metastatic Breast Cancer. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. I met with Dr. Erica Hamilton from the Sarah Cannon Research Institute to discuss recent key presentations and publications. In the first issue of this program with Dr. Hamilton, we chatted about the most recently approved of now a plethora of available antibody drug conjugates, the TROP2 ADC datopotamab deruxtecan for patients with endocrine-resistant metastatic ER-positive breast cancer, and more recently, for recurrent EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer. As the evidence for the use of ADCs increases, we see a frequent theme of greater efficacy than chemotherapy and often less toxicity, but also side effect profiles that may include different and new toxicities. The next paper discussed with Dr. Hamilton was by Heist et al. In the April 2024 issue of Cancer Treatment Reviews, reviewing the management of patients receiving Dato-DXd, and in particular, three very helpful graphics outlining a recommended approach to mucositis stomatitis, ocular surface events, or keratitis, and interstitial lung disease. I asked Dr. Hamilton for her thoughts and approaches to using this agent.
If I could leave people with one pearl, is to just not mentally group all the ADCs in one bucket. If you're walking in and you think this patient's on an ADC and their side effect profile is going to be similar to the ADC patient I saw in the other room, that's not true. These drugs are really unique. And I think that makes it a challenge for community oncologists because there's such a breadth of information. I think it's helpful that we're starting to use these drugs, you know, again, Dato and lung cancer, et cetera. But they really do have unique side effect profiles. So I think from trastuzumab deruxtecan, now that we have multiple indications, you know, we're familiar with the fact that we've got to take ILD seriously. And different than immunotherapy, pneumonitis or ILD, we're holding even for grade one. So these cases of, you know, we see it on a restaging scan, the patient's asymptomatic, you know, we need to act early because in the case of ADC, this can progress to fatal ILD if we don't kind of hold drug, get rid of it, and get the patient back on it. And then again, this similar to trastuzumab deruxtecan as well, that if we see grade two or if we see symptomatic ILD, we're not supposed to re-challenge with drug. And I think sometimes that's challenging for us in the clinic because patients are getting, you know, such a great response to this. The other notable side effect with datopotamab, which really is unique, you'd think it would be similar to sacituzumab because they're both TROP2 targeting ADCs, but it's not, is the mucositis. And again, the strategy here is prophylactic steroid mouthwash, not once they have sores, but they've really got to be diligent about it up front. Luckily, we don't have a big problem in the United States of getting this, but it can be a problem to get the steroid compounded mouth rinse in some other countries. But we're really trying to use that four times a day, you know, rinse around the mouth, spit, et cetera. And that does help, in my experience, cut down with mucositis quite a bit. The challenge is if these people get mucositis, it's hard to get rid of. You know, even a week or two of dose holding doesn't really completely resolve it. And then, you know, our other side effect is just nausea. We certainly can see nausea with our antibody drug conjugates. And so again, the strategy of using a prophylactic antiemetic, you know, drug regimen. It's different from chemo because I think chemo really, it's, you know, a lot of nausea and it kind of fades off a little quicker. What we see with our ADC patients, because the half-life is longer, is that that nausea tends to last a full week, maybe a week and a half or even 2 weeks. And so they really just kind of need a prophylactic, you know, around the clock regimen. And then most of them do very well. The other side effect that we see across some of these are ophthalmologic, you know, issues. Certainly a bigger issue, I'm kind of, you know, have experience with some other ones from phase one, but like a mirvetuximab, you know, this is really significant eye toxicity. I would say that the breast cancer ones, we have not seen that kind of eye toxicity. This is mainly just dry eyes. And so most of the time, just a simple lubricating eye drop is sufficient. But certainly just awareness that if your patient's complaining about eye symptoms, this can be a side effect of drug and have them see, you know, an eye doctor for that.
So I was thinking about another faculty person we had who said, Well, if you have the DXD payload, you always, quote, have to think about pneumonitis. But, I mean, there are a lot of drugs in oncology that, you know, I've heard so many cases of pneumonitis of all different kinds of drugs. And then I've heard other people say that maybe the reason T-DXD it's a problem is there are a lot of HER2 receptors in the lung. So is are the other, deruxtecan payload ADCs that aren't HER2 really elevated ILD? Do you really deal with it the same way as T-DXD, or is T-DXD different because of this HER2 thing?
Yeah, that's a really spot on question, I think. I think it actually has to do with the HER2, ironically. It may be a combination of the two. But what we do know is from the Dato trials, as well as a third DXD ADC, patritumab deruxtecan, which targets HER3 that's been in multiple trials, is that we see much less ILD and lower grade ILD in these other deruxtecan payloads than we do with trastuzumab deruxtecan. So I think it does have a little bit to do with the HER2. But because of that, these deruxtecan payloads do have a little bit, you know, more strict guidance around the ILD and really being cautious about this. I've got to say that I think it's really important to educate the patients about this because, you know, if somebody has a little bit of cough, they're probably going to a walk-in clinic or they're going to their primary care office. They're not necessarily calling their oncologist and thinking it has anything to do with it. And, the average walk-in clinic that sees a 70-year-old with a little bit of cough is probably going to think that they have bronchitis or a virus and may not really pick up on the fact that this could be ILD. So having our patients know that this can be a side effect and calling is pretty important.
Any other comments or observations about mucositis?
I think it's challenging. Dexamethasone mouthwash, whether we talk about, you know, everolimus in the SWISH study or the ADCs, really has been our best prophylaxis for mouth sores. You know, there's been some look at having ice chips, holding ice chips in the mouth during infusion, kind of like we do cryotherapy on the hands and feet for neuropathy. But the problem with that is really the half-life. And so I really haven't seen any compelling data that that helps. And I don't think that I'd want to sit with ice in my mouth for hours if it wasn't really going to help me. We know that good oral hygiene is important, right? You know, people that have kind of worse baseline, you know, gum disease, tooth disease do tend to have more problems. So probably not, you know, having as much bacteria and decay already in the mouth is helpful. So certainly kind of, you know, that good preventative strategy, kind of like managing your A1Cs before you start on a PI3 kinase inhibitor can help. But there's not a magic solution for this, unfortunately.
Another important recent data set discussed in the first issue of this series was presented at the recent ASCO plenary session, the Phase 3 ASCENT-04 KEYNOTE-D19 study in previously untreated PD-L1 positive advanced triple-negative breast cancer, demonstrating an advantage in efficacy and tolerability of the TROP2 ADC sacituzumab govitecan plus pembrolizumab versus chemotherapy with pembrolizumab. Keeping in mind the likely adaptation of this regimen in clinical practice, the importance of SG side effect management becomes even more critical. And the next paper discussed with Dr. Hamilton, it was initially presented at the 2024 ASCO meeting and just published now in the July issue of The Lancet, the PRIMED study, evaluating the use of preemptive growth factors and antidiarrheals in the use of sacituzumab, and this reported improved outcomes with both preventive strategies. I was curious about Dr. Hamilton's reaction to this study.
So sacituzumab, govitecan, you know, really two big side effects, neutropenia and diarrhea. And so this study essentially looked at, you know, can we use a little bit of prophylactic support with medications here to kind of decrease the incidence of those two. So this essentially looked at, for the first two cycles, having scheduled loperamide and then also using G-CSF up front. I'll be honest, I think most of us are using G-CSFs up front with sacituzumab, govitecan already. already. You know, really the neutropenia incidence is pretty significant. The challenge is it's given on, you know, the drug is given on day one and day eight. And so we tend to use a little bit more pegylated, you know, growth factor after that day eight, trying to boost up the white cell count until we head into that next cycle. This particular study used short acting, and it was kind of two consecutive days. But I think, you know, in community oncology, that can be challenging because most of our patients don't live right beside the clinic. And so we're essentially asking a patient to come 3 days a row, 2 weeks in a row. So, you know, if we can get away with a longer acting growth factor, that's fantastic. But then also loperamide for diarrhea. I have mixed feelings about this. I typically don't use loperamide up front. You know, this isn't a neratinib, lapatinib level diarrhea in my experience for sacituzumab. It's very polar. And so people either really have it and they really struggle, or I have quite a few patients that have no diarrhea. I think that's really in contrast to the TKIs where everybody has some degree of diarrhea. And so I kind of educate my patients up front, but I worry a little bit about kind of heading in the other direction with some constipation if you're piling on loperamide in the absence of a real problem. But I do think that we probably should be using a growth factor prophylactically.
CNS anti-tumor activity has become an important factor in the evaluation of systemic agents. And for example, the TKI tucatinib and the anti-HER2 ADC trastuzumab deruxtecan have demonstrated significant activity in HER2-positive CNS metastases. I asked Dr. Hamilton about a Trials in Progress poster from the 2025 ASCO meeting, a phase 2 study of datopotamab deruxtecan in patients with brain and leptomeningeal metastases.
I'm really excited to see the results of this because, again, in the challenging what we think we know, you know, we've always thought ADCs are incredibly bulky molecules and they're not going to cross the blood-brain barrier well. And certainly in the HER2 realm, this has proved us wrong. Trastuzumab deruxtecan really showing fantastic activity. So I think a very interesting question in, you know, triple negative, et cetera. We also know that the brain barrier, blood-brain barrier is just disrupted. Mets themselves, certainly if you've had intervention like surgery or radiation. So I think, you know, we're learning that probably the best agent you can give peripherally is some ways probably the best agent for the brain would be my takeaway. So I can't wait to see the data of this.
Yeah, when we did the year in review program with Ben Levy from Hopkins, and one of the papers was a study of people with brain mets who got data with lung, this is lung cancer. It was a small study, but they had 4 patients with untreated brain mets who had partial responses out of 18. And, you know, I was telling him the story of what happened in breast cancer and HER2, how for a while everybody was all excited about tucatinib because it made a lot of sense. And then we saw the TDXD actually empirically worked really well, maybe better. And now I guess a lot of people are going to TDXD before tucatinib.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think TDXD certainly... you know, compelling data. I say tucatinib certainly still has a role, whether you have brain mets or not, maybe especially immediately post-TDXD, where we know we can see some HER2 downregulation, having that kind of capecitabine, but then still having the HER2 agents on board, I think is really attractive there.
The final paper in this issue of 5-Minute Journal Club is a review article in the February issue of BBA, focusing on the critical topic of sequencing of ADCs and the mechanisms of resistance to these agents. The paper has a lot of great informative graphics, and I asked Dr. Hamilton to draw some mental pictures for us of how she envisions these mechanisms.
This is one of my favorite topics. So I think first you need to file ADCs mentally in as a chemotherapy substitute. So, you know, all of the data we have in breast cancer, and luckily, you know, I'm still proud that we probably have the most advanced data in breast cancer for ADCs. This should be used when we're thinking about chemotherapy. So certainly triple negative, you know, certainly HER2. But for hormone receptor positive disease, we should be exhausting our endocrine therapies first before we move to ADCs. We shouldn't be giving ADCs up front and then trying to circle back to endocrine therapies. So maybe that caveat. And then, you know, antibody drug conjugates really as a chemo substitute, kind of selectively targeting those cancer cells and leaving some of the rest of the body alone. I think there's some great diagrams in this review article, really talking about the different versions of ADCs we can have, you know, bispecific, biparatopic, immune mediating, where maybe you're targeting, you know, HER2 on one side and a CD3, the immune system on the other, or even degraders, right? So there's a lot of ways that these drugs can be used. The other question we kind of come up with is twofold. One, what about sequencing? And two, what about combinations? Combinations, I think, is an interesting one. You know, there have been some kind of preliminary studies looking at, you know, an ADC in combination with chemo or in combination with some targeting agents. I think combining with immunotherapy or combining with endocrine blockade, you know, non-overlapping toxicities, probably, you know, a fine idea for sure. But in terms of combining chemo with ADC, we're kind of getting back into that doublet chemo range where we're really adding a lot of toxicity. And so I don't think we're going to end up there. In terms of sequencing, this is our biggest challenge. So what do we need? We need new targets. So not just HER2 and TROP2. And we also need new payloads. So get out of the topoisomerase 1 family.